With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Wednesday to all of you. Nice to be with you. Appreciate you tuning in. Appreciate you getting up with us. We're with you till 10 o'clock today. Nice to be with you. Sean Pendergast, original Houston Texan Seth Payne. Seth, good morning. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. You know, just before we came in, it occurred to me, when I was a boy, I used to watch a lot of these documentaries about various bands. Creedence Clearwater Revival, Guns N' Roses, yeah. Madonna, Ciccone. And before every concert, a lot of them seem to be more on the pop music side of things, like with Madonna. They do a little, you know, she and all her dancers would get together and they'd do a little, you know, 1, 2, 3, go team type of thing. She might lead a prayer beforehand, Jack Easterby style. Yeah. And we don't have anything like that. We just roll, and I feel like we might be missing something. I feel like our 6 o'clock listeners aren't getting all of the unity and energy and everything else that Madonna Ciccone could bring to the stage when they're listening to Payne and Pendergast.
So is this something you want to do with our listeners, or is this something you feel you and I should do right before we go on the air?
I think you and I need to get together and, like, put our foreheads together and close our eyes and just and talk about, you know, finding our energy and our common soul. Yeah. We are one. We are one united. Let's go deliver the sports news and entertainment to Houston this morning.
Putting that down on our list of things. Hollow prayer. That's a show.
Hollow self-serving prayer
before show.
I'm just thinking of, like, if Axl Rose tried to do that with the band, and then
yeah, not really on brand for Guns N' Roses.
You know, all the dancers, dancers that they found at the strip club the night before.
Yes. So speaking of prayer, I mean, I guess thoughts and prayers to Tiger Woods. That was obviously huge news yesterday. Tiger Woods, as I'm sure many of you have heard, they're listing the injuries on the TV screen here in the studio right now. Some pretty bad leg injuries suffered by Tiger Woods in what was a pretty gruesome crash. He rolled his SUV into a gully in Southern California yesterday. Boy, 2021 is doing its best to try to keep up with 2020 right now. Remember when the calendar flipped and we're like, the year 2020 is over. Only greater things coming down the road. And already, at least here in Houston, already we've had like 4 big sports figures depart.
Well,
one more. We had an historic freeze. And now Tiger Woods driving off the road and rolling his SUV. It's not even the end of February yet.
But it's not like he died or anything.
No,
right? It's a rough stretch. I'm not minimizing it or anything, but he didn't. This is not a tragedy.
You wouldn't know it by watching the coverage yesterday. Holy crap.
This is the problem with golf, is that because athletes' careers can last so long. Like, Sean, you could tell me that Ben Hogan won a Masters at the age of 87, and I would say, that's crazy. I looked that up, actually. I wanted to be sure that Ben Hogan didn't win a Masters at the age of 87. Jack Nicklaus was the oldest to win a Masters at the age of 46.
Okay.
But we are now, I don't know, where are we at? Like round 5, round 6, round 7 of reflecting back on Tiger's career and wondering if this is it for him?
Feels like it. Feels like it. Yeah, I mean, we had the falling out with his wife. We've had the multiple back surgeries. We had his father passing away. It's been several tribulations along the way for old Eldrick. Yeah.
Right. So I just, when it, look, he's had a hell of a golf career, and maybe he comes back from this and plays golf, maybe he doesn't, but he's 45 years old.
Yeah.
I'm happy that he's probably going to make it out of this and be fine and healthy and walking and all that. As long as it's not life threatening, he doesn't get sepsis in the hospital or something. Good for you, Tiger. But I'm not doing any more reflecting on the career of Tiger.
No,
Woods.
I'm not either. That's and Seth, that's my takeaway. My takeaway from this was yesterday that, I mean, ESPN is covering it like he actually died. Like, they're having people come on and give what amounted to eulogies about his career. I'm like, he's having leg surgery. Like, it sounds like the careers are non life threatening, and I guess maybe some of it's just we're at a dead spot right now for national news, at least. Seem to never be at a dead spot for Houston news, and we'll get into all that in just a second. But yeah, my other takeaway is, God, you bringing up Jack Nicklaus just now, that he won the Masters at the age of 46. Tiger's 45, and I guess it's just the latest in an example of how, like, 45 is the new 25. Like, go look at Jack Nicklaus footage of him winning the Masters at age 46. He's, like, really dumpy and looks like he's 60.
I know.
Like, Tiger, for all the injuries that he's had and all the back surgeries and the knee surgeries, Tiger's still yoked. He's a year different than when Jack won the Masters at age 46.
Golf is going to be an interesting one as guys are fit now. I would imagine, I mean, if Tom Brady can do it at the age of, what's he now, 43?
43.
At the age of 43. I would imagine that a lot of these guys are going to be playing on into their 40s.
Yeah.
So, will Tiger come back from this? I would guess right now, yes, he'll play professional golf again. If Alex Smith can come back and actually get sacked after one of the most gruesome round of lower leg injuries we've ever seen, then I'd imagine Tiger can come back and play golf. I'm not minimizing how hard it is to play golf.
Right.
I'm just saying that the challenges would probably be a little bit less than football.
Yeah, so Tiger Woods is going to be okay. Multiple leg surgeries yesterday. We'll certainly keep an eye on the news cycle with that. Meanwhile, we're actually getting Texans personnel news, Seth. We're getting little dribs and drabs of the beginning of the Nick Caserio era as far as reshaping this roster goes. Yeah, J.J. Watt.
I got excited.
You did?
Yeah.
Just from seeing news or about the actual effect of the particular news?
That Nick Caserio is actually making moves other than just signing David Quesenberry's younger brother,
right?
Who was a New England guy and an ex-Marine.
Yeah.
So you have to, like, you got to give credit there. But yeah, the fact that, okay, they got rid of Senio Calamente. We actually talked about this yesterday, whether the Texans would get rid of Senio Calamente or not. I thought, hey, maybe you keep him around as a utility guy. And after all, Max Sharping needed to be replaced by Senio Calamente last year, but it's certainly nobody's shedding a tear. This isn't evidence that Jack Easterby is controlling the world or anything like that. This is the kind of roster move that any GM, not just a new GM to a team, is going to do. They gotta make some of these moves on the margins here.
So, and these are the moves that got made within the last 24 hours. Senio Calamete, who started 14 games for them at left guard last year, let go. They save about $1.5 million on the cap there. Peter Kalambaye, backup inside linebacker, special teams guy, he gets let go, not deemed a real scheme fit for Lovie Smith, and he's a role player, fringe player anyways. They save a little under $1 million there. So they shave off a couple, $2.5 million in cap space. Meanwhile, they sign Buddy Howell, they sign Cornell Armstrong, each to cheapo one-year deals. These are truly on-the-margin types of moves that are being made. But Seth, the Calamete one, the one angle with the Calamete thing that I think is noteworthy is that, to me, this is a guy who started 14 games for you last year and started in front of a second-round pick who had a rookie year that was very promising. To me, cutting Calamete is sort of a low-key indictment of Mike Devlin in a way, where they're clearly going to roll with Max Sharping now, it would seem, at left guard. And if you're cutting Senio Calamete, who is still a relatively cheap option for a veteran, that to me is Nick Caserio saying, okay, well, this guy clearly wasn't getting coached up. We figure if this guy can get even just average level coaching, he's a former second round pick. We feel okay about throwing him back into the mix.
See, I guess I was going the opposite of it, which was, man, maybe Senio Calamete, who, like, honestly, at times, all the offensive linemen at various times under Bill O'Brien looked lost. They looked like they didn't know what their responsibilities were from week to week. When smart people look like dumb football players, that's usually the fault of the scheme and the coaching.
Yeah.
So I've always given all those guys a little bit of a pass because I could tell that they're either, because of scheme or coaching, they're not getting the same level of instruction and instruction. I don't mean like actual coaching instruction, but what are you supposed to do this week in this situation? Like, instructions for that week. So I wondered if maybe they would cut all those guys a break a little bit and say, you know what, maybe Zach Fulton and Senio Calamete are better than what I see on film right now. But look, that's all speculation. Casario is going to do, if he clears the deck of guys like Zach Fulton, of Senio Calamete, of various guys on the defense that aren't really holding their weight, then yeah, you gotta clear the way for younger, cheaper guys.
That's it. That you just hit on it right there. Like, you gotta sink or swim with some of these guys who are still on rookie deals over the next year. So that to me is part of 2021. Whether Deshaun Watson is here or not, you've got to clean up the salary cap. You've got to get your draft house back in order in the future, and you've got to find out what you've got with some of these young guys on rookie contracts.
One thing that I noticed yesterday, a nice little social media phenomenon. I'm always curious when the people who want to seem super, super smart act like there's a backlash, and how how the backlash is stupid, but there is actually no backlash. Like after Senio Calamete got cut, I saw about the Senio Calamete cut was all these people saying, like, oh, here come all the people saying that Easterbrook's ruining the team. I don't know, here come all the reactionary. And I'm like, where are the people criticizing the Senio Calamete cut?
Yeah.
Like, okay, great. Good for you. Yeah. You're the real truth seeker, aren't you?
Yeah, should be a hell of an offseason. All right, the final first-round matchup in our J.J. Watt free agency fan bracket is up. I got it put up on the Twitter feed today. Would this actually be the ultimate ring chase if JJ were to sign with this team? We'll preview it next. All right, so we have our final first-round matchup in the JJ Watt free agency fan bracket. And it involves the current reigning defending Super Bowl champion, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They are our 2 seed on the NFC side of the bracket, and they take on, Seth, the 7 seed Minnesota Vikings, who I would imagine is similar to the Chicago Bears in that they're probably a team that J.J. Watt grew up rooting against. I would imagine he did not like the Minnesota Vikings very much at all growing
boo,
up in Wisconsin.
Yeah, boo. Boo to the Vikings. Now, like I said yesterday, when it comes
out
to playing in NFC North stuff, right, I don't think J.J. cares about that. It's not the same as going to play for the Titans or something.
Right, right, right. So the Tampa Bay Buccaneers versus the Minnesota Vikings. Would the Tampa Bay – which – scenario would be perceived as more of a ring chase? The Kansas City Chiefs, who I think who are the favorites to win the Super Bowl next year, or the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who have a quarterback who's won 7 Super Bowls?
I thought you were saying between the Vikings and the Bucks, and I thought maybe you were the one on Quaaludes this morning instead of me.
Right, right, right.
Maybe if I did Quaaludes, I'd actually slow down to a normal pace of speech.
I wouldn't start.
Ben, write that down as tomorrow's experiment. Seth's going to do lewds in the morning.
I'm writing it right underneath hollow prayer before show. Seth.
Hollow prayer lewds before show. Pop some lewds.
Yep.
And then off we go.
That's right.
Also, as a corollary to that, before it for 1A on your checklist, find some lewds.
Mm. Yeah.
I don't know where you find Quaaludes. I'm sure our listeners will tell us. 713-572-4.
Probably harder during the pandemic, no doubt about
so,
that.
So, more of a ring chase, Tampa or Kansas City.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. Boy, in his last three championship opportunities, Patrick Mahomes is 1-for-3. It's a pretty pathetic record, really. You know, botched the AFC championship game 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Won last year after botching the first half of that game.
Yeah.
And then he botched, just had a horrible, horrible performance this year.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna
say he stinks, yeah.
Yeah, he's
it's gotta be Tampa Bay.
I do think that Tampa's more of a ring chasing opportunity because I think Tampa's going to pay to bring all those guys back. I think for JJ to go to Tampa, he would actually have to take a substantially lower contract than he might get elsewhere, cuz Tampa, these are Tampa's notable free agents amongst others, some other good players that are also Levante David, Shaq Barrett, Chris Godwin, the receiver who was on his rookie contract. So that's not just that you have to pay him. It's like you're paying him $1 million last year. Now you're going to have to pay him $14 or $15 million a year. It'll be less than that on the cap, but still.
Rookie contract. And by the way, he was like a day two pick. Like, this is not a Will Fuller rookie contract. Like, this is like a third or fourth round pick rookie contract.
Chris Godwin was one of those, it's a second or a third rounder that, you know, Bill O'Brien would probably claim, you know, is no good because second rounder.
Right.
Rob Gronkowski. Free agent. It's Rob Gronkowski and Antonio Brown are both free agents. Gronk made $9 million last year. Was not worth $9 million, except what was it worth to the Bucks that by the time they got to the Super Bowl, some of the most savvy decoys you could possibly have which would be Rob Gronkowski and Antonio Brown. Like, they weren't even decoys. They were the guys that took advantage of everybody else getting all the attention.
They caught all three touchdown passes.
Yeah,
the two of them.
Yeah. So there's something to be said for having the savvy guys that because the more talented Chris Godwins and Mike Evans are attracting all the attention, Rob Gronkowski and Antonio Brown can make the plays they did in the Super Bowl. I don't know. I don't know what you do with those guys, but I'm guessing they try to bring both of them back. And Dominican Sue is a free agent. Again, he's not a huge money guy, but he's still okay. Would they swap out a J.J. Watt for an Dominican Sue? That's really the question. Because Dominican Sue didn't have a great year either, but then came up big in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And you know, he's had a knack for doing that these last few years with the Rams. He kind of did the same thing. He came up big in the playoffs. I have a feeling that if Tampa had to choose between re-signing Ndamukong Suh or giving J.J. Watt the same contract, they would want J.J. Watt.
I would think they'd want J.J. Watt, too. The one I look at more as a J.J. sort of either-or, Seth, is Shaq Barrett. And I know they're different players, they're different style players, but I think ultimately what J.J. provides is it might be more similar to what Barrett would provide than what Suh would provide, which is a presence coming off the edge, rushing the passer. Shaq Barrett's going to command top dollar from somebody. He's probably going to get over $20 million a year from somebody. Ooh. He played on the franchise tag last year. Even in this, because what he does is an elite skill, right? I mean, it's the list is quarterbacks and people who protect quarterbacks and people who get after quarterbacks. Those are the hierarchy of needs for an NFL team. Shaq Barrett does one of those things. So I think he's going to get over $20 million a year from somebody. Would you rather have him for multiple years at $20 million a year, or would you rather sign J.J. Watt to like 2 years, $25 million or something
especially,
like that? J.J. Watt, he might allow you to re-sign Chris Godwin to a market deal.
It seems like they are in extreme short-term mode right now, too, where they're going to say, all right, we got a championship squad. We're going to do what it takes, and then we'll figure out the rest later.
That's right.
We'll just go ahead and damn the torpedoes full speed ahead. Let's sign all these guys. But with a guy like Shaq Barrett, so if they have to make their decisions between Godwin and Barrett, boy, you know, a pass rusher should be more valuable than a wide receiver, and yet, I feel like Godwin's the more safe and stable long-term proposition that's going to help out whoever the quarterback is after Tom Brady's gone. Because then when Tom Brady's gone, I would take Godwin over Barrett. So, and that leaves room for J.J. Watt. But I don't think teams are going to look really at J.J. as an edge rusher anymore. I think they're going to look at him as a guy that they want to move down inside. Mm. That's where I look at Ndamukong Suh versus J.J. Watt. You know, J.J. played on the edge more last year than he ever has in his career, which was completely and totally a function of the fact that the outside linebackers for the Texans were so bad.
Yeah.
I think if all things were equal, and by that I mean if the Texans had like an average level of talent, they probably would have preferred to move him down inside on passing downs more than they did.
I will take your word for it. You are the former defensive lineman on this show. Your opinion carries weight. That is Seth Payne, people. All right, Houston, you know we've been through a lot with the pandemic and the winter storm last week. We want you to know that we are here for you, especially you small businesses out there. If you're going through tough times, tell us your story. We're doing something called the Small Biz Shoutout. Send us an email at smallbusiness@sportsradio610.com. That's smallbusiness@sportsradio610.com. If you own a small business, if you manage a small business, we can give you a shout out on the air, try and help jumpstart that business for you here during these tough times. Already a pandemic, now we got a winter freeze last week that we've got to deal with the fallout from. We want to help you with that. It's the Sports Radio 610 Small Biz Shout Out. Again, smallbusiness@sportsradio610.com. Tell us your story to be included in the Sports Radio 610 Small Biz Shout Out. Trade packages are equal. We asked this question yesterday. Would you trade for Russell Wilson? Or would you trade for Deshaun Watson? I put up a poll. The people have spoken loudly as to who they would take. We'll tell you the results next. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne. Seth's laughing because I was just during the break. I said to Seth, I said, boy, Seth, you know what's awesome? This Dunkin' Donuts app where I can just put in my order. I go on a walk every day through River Oaks, and I go to the Dunkin' Donuts on Shepherd as part of my walk to pick up a medium coffee with cream and two sweet and lows. That's my routine. And I've started using the app to order it as I'm walking there. And I walk in and it's sitting on the counter waiting for me. And Seth's like, yeah, they've been doing that for like 4 years now.
You had a Dr. Rick moment, the guy from the Progressive commercial,
yes.
the Don't Be Your Parents commercial.
Yes.
You went into detail explaining exactly how a process works that a lot of people have been using for a long time. No. You got it. This is the thing. You don't even have to order at the counter.
To my credit, I realized it about two-thirds of the way through my sentence explaining it. So I still have the self-awareness to know that I'm like a year or two behind. But, yeah, I'm getting caught up. Give me a break.
My wife had a period where she was, because of some health issues, she couldn't really leave the house for a while and, like, for a long time. And when we got her back out into the world, I did that. I went to Starbucks, and she looked at me like I was like from the future or something. She's like, "What did you just do?"
Did you?
Because I had ordered it online. We walked up to the counter, and we stopped. And yeah,
the nefarious thing to do would be like to act like it was something special that only you and a few others had. You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like to impress her.
Yeah, like
right?
It was my gold card.
Yeah, exactly.
Or something.
Exactly. All right. So Russell Wilson or Deshaun Watson, we posed this question yesterday, and this came from a result of an item that Michael Silver, the NFL Network, was reporting earlier in the week, that Seattle was getting phone calls about Russell Wilson in the wake of his expressing some mild dissatisfaction, I'll call it, with the team, that teams are calling up the Seahawks just to see if there's a Russell Wilson market. And the question becomes, what would a Russell Wilson trade package look like?
What's a realistic price if the Seahawks were to trade Russell Wilson? I think you start with something like 3 first-round draft picks. That's kind of the message that other teams believe would be conveyed. But, you know, I still think there is a lot of time to get through this rough patch. He's under contract for 3 more years. He's obviously done some incredible things in that city and for that franchise, and the Seahawks certainly know what they have.
Okay, so it led to the question, and I think a logical question off of Silver's opinion there, that, okay, you know, that sounds a lot like the trade packages that get kicked around for Deshaun Watson. Like every Watson article feels like, or report about Deshaun Watson on the NFL Network and such, Seth, feels like it begins with a sentence, well, it starts with 3 first-round picks. Like a lot of the articles start that way. Well, that's the same thing Silver just said about Russell Wilson. So I posed the question yesterday, if all trade packages are equal, would you trade for Russell Wilson or Deshaun Watson? You and I both agreed that it would be Deshaun Watson. I was curious how close it would be with the people, though. I was, even with my largely Houston followership, I was shocked that this one was as lopsided as it was. I don't know if you've looked at the results of this poll. Now, the poll's not over yet. They're still.
I haven't. I'm going to guess that it's 90% Deshaun.
It's 87.1% yeah. Deshaun Watson, that they would take Deshaun over Russell Wilson. And there's replies to it as well that list the reasons why. Age seems to be a big one with Deshaun. He's 5 years younger.
Yeah, I mean, as much as we don't think of quarterbacks ever aging anymore and that they'll play on into their 40s, Russell Wilson's going to turn 33 this season. It used to be 35 was kind of the cutoff point for where you thought of, because there was a point at 35 where a lot of quarterbacks just fall off a cliff right around their mid-30s. I don't think people are doing that anymore. You know, I think people are now looking at, okay, you'll probably play into your late 30s. With Russell Wilson, he does take a lot of hits. Some of them are his own fault. I think you could put a really, really, really strong offensive line around Russell Wilson, and he's still going to take some hits because he loves to extend plays. It's good. It's good that he extends plays, but he's going to take hits. And I think Deshaun Watson's the same guy. So if you look at those two guys and you say, all right, which one's got the best chance of lasting another 6, 7, 8 years? Probably going to be Deshaun Watson, especially now that he's all beefy. Sean's all yoked up. He used to be kind of spindly looking, wasn't he? Yeah, Deshaun, as athletic as he was, didn't have all that great of a physique. Now he's kind of he's done grown up into a man.
He has, and yet he still is kind of sinewy. You know what I mean? He's still kind of slender.
Yeah, I got a very a Seth Payne physique, you know, like muscular and powerful, yet sinewy.
Right,
and lean.
Right. I hadn't thought about like that, but now they come to think of it.
Like a jungle cat. That's what they always say about
like,
Seth Payne.
Like
old
you.
Jungle cat Payne.
I need to pounce. Yeah. Absolutely. So that I'm obviously, you and I agree with the results of this poll. We said as much yesterday. Let me ask you this. If it were just for 2021, who would you rather have? Deshaun Watson or Russell Wilson? Like, who's the better quarterback right now?
Okay. Obviously, taking apart the fact that Deshaun knows this. On just sticking those guys on any team in the NFL.
On a garden variety average NFL team.
I still want Deshaun. I honestly think that Deshaun still has untapped upside, which it sounds strange given that he had such a good year passing the football. But I think in terms of – I think Deshaun has more of a whole field, whole team view of football, I think. I think that Deshaun really just kind of sees the game differently than a lot of quarterbacks do. And his vision and his football IQ is – it's at a different level. And I really think that he still has room to go there if he can be on a team that exploits the running game, that takes advantage of running opportunities that are there because Deshaun's such a good passer. I think he's a guy that can basically be that true point guard player in a way that – and I'm not insulting Russell Wilson. It's not like Russell Wilson isn't a great quarterback. I think Deshaun just has that next level it factor.
Can you imagine if Deshaun Watson were ever in an offense that had a capable offensive line, a running game, and a head coach that was calling plays that exclusively mapped to Deshaun Watson's skill set? Like, Deshaun has been operating with gigantic boat anchors around both ankles, in a way, over the last few years. You know, and I know that the kind of the thing to do if you're in the Deshaun Watson camp, if you like to defend Deshaun Watson in these arguments of comparing to young quarterbacks, is, boy, can you imagine if Deshaun Watson were getting to do the things that Patrick Mahomes is doing in Kansas City's offense? I think there's something to that. Seth, the guy threw for 4,800 yards this year, and he was dynamic on a team that might have been the worst running team that I've ever rooted for in my life. This might have been the worst run. Forget about rooted for. This might have been the worst rushing offense that I've seen watching NFL football in my lifetime. It was pathetic.
And it should have been easy because it was there for the taking.
Yes.
I mean, teams were just trying to take away the deep ball because they knew they could stop the run up front. And that's where, as much as, you know, all the analytics and everything is creating more and more of a passing game, there's still, you've got to attack every area of the field. And when you can't attack every area of the field, then all of a sudden it weakens your ability to do it down in the red zone. The red zone's really where it matters. You see all these gaudy stats that people put up. When you get down into the red zone and the defense simply has less green grass to defend, if you can't run the football at all, then it really, really hampers what you can accomplish down there. And that's where Deshaun could have had an all-time caliber season if he'd had a complete offense around him, and he obviously didn't. Let's rehash the story of the 2020 football season that happened.
Yeah. Are we starting to, as we go through this process, and Seth and I are rehashing a poll that I put up yesterday where 87% of the people said if the trade packages were equal, they would take Deshaun Watson instead of Russell Wilson. Are we basically, Seth, over the course of the last week or so, because I think we might have put up a Trevor Lawrence or Deshaun Watson poll last week that Deshaun won pretty handily. Are we starting to whittle down to the point where it's a safe take to say that the only player that Deshaun Watson should be traded straight up for and you feel like you've won the deal is Patrick Mahomes? Are we at that point?
Like you feel like you've won the deal? Wait, the only one I could make this argument for, let's say there was no controversy about Jack Easterby or ownership or Bill O'Brien or anything, and let's say you had a GM that was already proven and everybody was all on board, like, okay, this guy knows what he's doing, but the Texans have their roster issues, so I don't know, like, let's say they imported some GM who would be a GM without beyond reproach. I guess there really aren't any. Let's say they brought in the guy from Indianapolis.
Yeah, he's good.
What if his first move was, you know what, I feel really good about this. I've been scouting football players for a long, long time, and Trevor Lawrence is as good a quarterback prospect as I've ever seen. The Texans really are at a point where they need to reboot their roster and clear some salary space. We're just going to trade Deshaun Watson for Trevor Lawrence straight up, basically. Trade for that first-round pick, yeah.
Well,
would that be a revolutionary, visionary move, or would that guy immediately be labeled – an idiot and a moron.
He'd be labeled a mad scientist because
a mad scientist with a. And would people condemn the move?
Yes, and you know why I say that? Because everybody is screaming from the rooftops right now that the Texans can't trade Deshaun Watson. They shouldn't trade Deshaun Watson. He's the bird in the hand. He's the sure thing. He's the franchise quarterback. He's what you spend years and years looking to actually get, and now you have it. So now it's your job to manage around that contract, not jettison that contract for a relative unknown, albeit a low-risk unknown, but an unknown in Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, it's still a huge risk.
It's getting too cute is what it is.
Because we've all been told things about prospects, right? And we all know that, and scouts themselves know this, there's no such thing as a sure thing. You just flat out don't know. There are things that Trevor Lawrence hasn't had to do in that Clemson offense that he'll have to do in the NFL. And you just assume that, I don't like using the word smart, because there's lots of really intelligent people that don't have, that can't be smart quarterbacks. Because it's the immediacy of the decisions you have to make. Yeah. It's the muscle memory that at times you're not actually even making decisions. It's just drilled into you. So a lot of guys that did really well on their Wunderlich that aren't smart NFL quarterbacks. So you just don't know if Trevor Lawrence necessarily has that in him. You don't know if he has the ability to absorb all the mental side of the game and operate it really quickly. But you've got a pretty good feel about it.
Sure.
Because he shows enough intelligence in the scheme that he's in. So, but he hasn't shown it to the level that Deshaun Watson has. Yeah, there's no – Patrick Mahomes would be the only one right now. Because I thought about this yesterday. As much as there's a whole lot of promise and excitement about potentially this young crop of quarterbacks, we felt a lot more like that maybe 2 years ago, right? When it was, let's see what it becomes of Kyler Murray. Wow, this Baker Mayfield, whoo! And then Deshaun Watson, Pat Mahomes,
yeah.
Who am I missing? These guys that looked like, man, they might really be the future. A little bit of that shine has come off.
Yeah, Lamar Jackson for a season. He was the MVP for a season, but even he's regressed a little bit.
Remember how stupid you were just 1 year ago if you suggested that, hey, let's wait on Lamar Jackson a little bit.
Right.
Oh, you were the dumbest person on earth. Well, hey, look, I've been through this before. I've seen quarterbacks come out really, really strong out of the gate. Let's pump the brakes a little bit. Oh, my gosh. I can't believe how stupid you are that you don't see that a guy that's an MVP caliber player isn't going to be awesome for the next 20 years.
Well, especially unicorn quarterbacks that run the ball a lot. I mean, we've seen defensive coordinators adjust to them before. Eventually, you've got to be able to throw the football at a high level in the National Football League, as Brock Osweiler would say. Hey, Seth, rate this trade for me here as we roll on here on a Wednesday morning. Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610. This is from Pro Football Focus's mock draft. Yet another mock draft where they're starting to mock in trades for the Houston Texans. This is with the Denver Broncos. So the Texans would wind up with the 9th overall pick in the draft. Are you ready? Denver gets Deshaun Watson. The Texans get the 9th pick in the draft, and they draft Trey Lance from North Dakota State, the quarterback. They get a second-round pick in this draft, and they draft cornerback Greg Newsome from Northwestern, so they get a quarterback and a cornerback. And in addition, they get first-round picks in 2022 and 2023, as well as a second-round pick in 2022. So 3 firsts and 2 seconds, including a first that they use on a new quarterback for Deshaun Watson.
What's the number pick overall? What's
ninth.
What position? The ninth
overall. Okay, ninth so, overall pick.
This is why I'm glad Casario is here. Jack Easterby would look at that 9th pick in the 2nd round and say, "Hey, that's really first round talent, but without all that extra money you got to pay."
You bring that up, and not to get off on a tangent.
He literally said that. Everybody, I'm not making that up. He actually said that. Well, the Texans in a press release. The Texans in some notes they gave out last year said that about the 2nd round pick that the Texans got.
I do want to get your grade on this hypothetical trade here, but as long as you mention that real quick, and yes, we went through the press release the Texans put out to defend the DeAndre Hopkins trade the day after the trade, in retrospect, is one of the most offensive pieces of literature that I've ever read in my life. And the part that got me angry over the weekend that I didn't get as angry about in the moment just because I was looking at the overall ridiculousness of all 12 of those bullet points staring me in the face. Once I had a chance to process each of them individually, where they said at the very beginning, hey, it's only 18 spots lower than Stephon Diggs went for with the Bills. And I'm like, yeah, and Hopkins is a better player than Stephon Diggs. Now, they may be viewed as equals now because Diggs was amazing in Buffalo this year. But at the time, Diggs was like a 900-yard-a-year receiver in Minnesota. Yeah, that's why the trade was such an egregious slap in the face to Texans. Oh, okay, I'm getting retroactively angry. Seth, what do you think of this?
It's only 18 picks, Sean.
Then it's one pick lower.
It's the funniest thing about that is that that is such an egregious departure from like the very best things you can think as a general manager.
Oh,
general
God.
Managers, it's all about like, hey, winning the small battles, all a bunch of thousands of small battles here and there. And that, yeah, little things matter because they add up.
Yes.
So to say only 18 spots,
it's a lower, lot of slots. It's not 18.
It's almost. Wait, what was the pick for Stephon Diggs? What number was it overall?
It was like 22.
So it's almost 100% lower.
Right.
It's almost 100%. You're almost twice as low as, yeah, as where you picked originally. So anyway.
Yeah.
So the danger in that and saying you've taken three first-rounders, you've gotten three first-rounders and a second-rounder, I don't want anything unless it's equivalent to four first-round picks. So that maybe it's an active player who's – played his way into a first-round status type of guy. That, man, okay, wow, this guy's so good that, yeah, I would take him. I would much rather have this veteran player who's proven, maybe still on his rookie deal,
Bradley
than
Chubb.
A first-round pick. What's that?
Bradley Chubb in this
yeah,
case.
Yeah, yeah, give me a Bradley Chubb or something. Then, okay, that's a first-round pick, all right?
Right? So
I don't want that. That Greg Newsom, the cornerback that you would take with that second round, that's what it makes me nervous is because it's almost like Peter King is saying, hey, here's three first-round picks and a cornerback that people are people like a lot, it would be a good value at a position of need. No. That's not the same as a first-round pick.
Right.
Give me three first-round picks and Bradley Chubb, then maybe we got something.
Yeah, yeah. So Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. There is other quarterback news going on around the league. Ben Volen, who writes for the Boston Globe, has a notebook section on Sunday in his column. He actually mentions Deshaun Watson in here. And he says that there's a growing frustration in Deshaun Watson's camp. And he cites Quincy Avery's tweet that we talked about last week in the wake of the Carson Wentz trade, where, remember, Quincy Avery tweeted, hey, what's the criteria to get a quarterback traded, asking for a friend? He says that Deshaun Watson may have to throw more of a tantrum if he's going to get traded by the Texans. And he cites a league source saying the Texans said that he could be in. He cites a league source saying the Texans had told him he could be involved. He being Deshaun could be involved with the head coaching search, but not the GM search. I guess sort of with the Texans kind of justifying like, hey, did he really have a right to get all up in his feelings about us not notifying him about Nick Caserio? It was really the head coaching search that we were going to involve him on. I guess first, what do you think about Deshaun's capability of throwing more of a tantrum?
Yeah, at
is
some
he
point
wired
it would have
that
to be
way?
Him doing it in the first person, right? Instead of people in his camp or sources close to him.
Yes.
And all of that.
Right.
I don't know. I wonder if that's going through his mind at all right now. Because you know how it is. Even though the majority of people right now side with Deshaun Watson, there's still – you hear the negative voices a lot louder than you hear the positive voices. It's like a stand-up comedian, and it might be killing it, but if there's one person with a scowl in the room, they fixate on that person with a scowl, or some of them do, and they can't get over the fact that somebody hates their act.
Right.
So is Deshaun that guy that's just is sensitive to – because I don't think he's sensitive to criticism or anything, but – he might hear that 20% that disapproves of him a lot louder than the 80% that approve of him, and maybe it starts to wear on him.
I just can't envision a heel version of Deshaun Watson. I just can't. You know, a version where Deshaun Watson turns into a whiner or a crybaby or someone who is trying to use that type of demeanor to facilitate his way out of town. I just can't get to a mental headspace where that person exists.
Yeah, so what is Ben Volen's point about being told that he would be involved in the coaching search and not the GM search? Is that there people in the Texans camp are thinking that he's being irrational because he was upset about the Caserio hire?
Yeah, I think so. That the miscommunication is more a Deshaun thing than it is a Texans thing.
That comes again from, I think, this outsider perspective that, oh, this is all about Deshaun wanting to have his way with the selection, where I think it's more likely that it was the hire of Caserio was a clear indication that Jack Easterby was still in charge.
Yeah.
I think that's where – and then Caserio, remember, I'd forgotten about this. I'd forgotten somehow that Caserio was amongst the top three highest paid general managers in football.
Yes.
According to Adam Schefter.
That's,
I mean,
good coin.
All of it just pointed so much to the fact that somehow Easterby had really grasped and gained control of everything. Because Easterby's the one that negotiated that contract, reportedly.
Yes.
So Easterby gave his buddy... The average NFL GM makes about $2 to $3 million a year, and reportedly Caserio is making $6 million a year. Like that's the contract that Easterby negotiated. Easterby, by the way, because people ask, there's still some skepticism out there. I think Lamont, you know, tries to argue this with me every now and then. Our listener Lamont, just do the math. Easterby makes more money than a lot of NFL general managers.
Yeah.
What does that tell you? In an organizational chart, if you go to who's got a lot of power and control here, let's go with the guy that makes more money than a lot of NFL general managers, and then negotiates a contract for his buddy that makes his buddy one of the top three highest paid general managers.
Seth, he gift-wrapped the commission for that deal to his own agent as well, Easterby did. Easterby and Caserio have the same agent. So Bob Lamont got the commission off of that Caserio contract. It was a little side stocking stuffer for the agent as well.
And I don't usually, I try not to get too involved in the, hey, this guy's got the same agent as this guy, because it's true all over sports, but the Bob Lamonte stuff is incredible.
If you're negotiating a contract, then that's a completely different thing. A contract that agent's going to get paid off of. Hey, speaking of Jack Easterby, an article about Jack Easterby that Seth and I are going to run through here that I think reveals one of the most frustrating things about the Easterby experience. That's next.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend, or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.